The Touching the Trail Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Touching the Trail Podcast, our weekly ritual of peace, presence, and perseverance. This week's episode is episode 181 with our guest today, Ultra Romance. Now, before we get into who Ultra Romance is, I just want to take care of a little business. Now, there are two ways that you can support Touching the Trail. The first is that you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And the second way is that you can go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Now, these are handheld deep tissue massage tools. And both those links are in the show notes. Now, who is Ultra Romance? Well, he is known by many names, Benedict, Benet, Ronnie, Poppy, and many more, and he is arguably an Instagram sensation, if that is the right word, who I have been following for quite a while now, more than a few years probably, a couple years, who knows. He's an ultra-endurance cyclist who likes to bike pack and pretty much just ride his bike really, really far all around the country. He spends most of his time moving, riding his bike, traveling around the country, just living on the saddle and living in the dirt, pretty much, foraging for food and living off the land very simply, minimally, and deliberately. He is definitely a character, that is for sure. On Instagram, he definitely has a very specific style and way of speaking that he kind of takes on to develop the character of Ultra Romance on his Instagram account, at Ultra Romance, and his other Instagram account, at Ultra Romance underscore Mach 2. Yeah, he has two Instagram accounts. And he makes my feed very interesting when I scroll through, very fascinating and very compelling because of the way that he presents the love and the passion that he has for the simple act of riding bikes on that social media platform is unparalleled. Nobody else does it like him. He really presents riding bikes as a lifestyle, more than just a sport or an exercise activity that you participate in for a couple hours every day to train for some race or what have you. He presents it as something that you do as a life, that you live it. You don't just talk about it or post about it. And while it is ironic for me to say that you don't just post about it while talking about somebody who I met and found through Instagram, nevertheless, his truthfulness, his genuineness shines through in Instagram, in my opinion, with the way that he presents the life that he leads through bikes, through riding around, through living simply and minimally, through adventuring all around the country in the dirt, on the trails, with a bike between his legs. And so today we pull back the curtain a little on the character of Ultra Romance, and we kind of delve into Ronnie's philosophy, as I call him today, as he told me to call him today, and the philosophy that he has built around riding bikes, around his life as he spends his time in the saddle. I definitely want to talk to him more. We only had about half an hour to talk today. He had to catch a ride somewhere. So I'm definitely going to have him back on the show sometime soon. Hopefully very soon. Who knows? We'll see. Because there's a lot more points that I wanted to explore with him about his perspective on things and his story and everything else. So consider this maybe part one of my talk with Ultra Romance. But I truly hope you enjoy my chat with my friend now, Ronnie. So with your whole character, I guess, on Instagram, I'm curious if you know, because with most guests that I have on, I talk about, you know, I start with their story, their background, how they got into whatever sport it is that, or whatever reason that I'm mainly having them on for, if it's, you know, for running or for meditation or whatever it is. But with you, you seem so, well, I don't know, I guess the word maybe is mysterious in a lot of ways with your... the whole character that you've built on Instagram. Is your story important to you in the sense of like talking about where you came from? Or is it more of the kind of the mythos of Ultra Romance as you are right now? I mean, how does that kind of break down for you?
Good question. I think everyone's story is pretty important, you know? I suppose I may appear mysterious because maybe it's the vagueness that I sometimes impose just to kind of make it, oh, we're curious as to where I might be at any certain time. It actually allows me to be a bit more under the radar with my, like, if somebody's looking for me, they could be like, oh, he's out somewhere right now. You can't expect him to get right back to you. So that all works in my favor. But yeah, beyond that, my backstory is I'm a lifelong cyclist. I just found that riding bikes at a very young age just brought me the freedom that I knew that I wanted, even when I was, you know, a young boy riding around Clinton, Connecticut. And yeah, I was a quiet kid and just kind of, I think, really connected with inanimate objects. The bicycle was my first love, continues to be that. Nom, I love my partner Nom quite a bit also, but the bicycle is just, I hold it on a pedestal. I worship it. So it's been a lifelong thing for me, and I've always subsidized my bike travel by doing seasonal work, and I was a bike racer for a while in the early 90s and 2000s, and then worked on my father's fishing boat for 16 years in the summers, and would just go out bike touring in the winters. So that's about 5 or 6 years ago, I was able to stop doing that just because I'm able to make a living off of travel photography and my own products that I design, develop, and sell. And so, yeah, that's where I am now. It's pretty weird way to make a living. I planned for it, but I wouldn't have it any other way, certainly.
And you're sponsored as well, right, from various companies and such?
Yeah. The sponsorship stuff is, I was sponsored by Specialized for 3 seasons. I don't do that anymore. Now it's just all of my own stuff for the most part. Velocity Wheels sets me up with product with wheels whenever I need them. They're a great brand that I work with. And yeah, the other stuff is really all of my own stuff that I develop, I suppose, sponsor myself with.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned somewhere that I was reading in preparation for our chat that the stuff that you design and build are things that you would want to see in the world, and you don't, so then you build them. And I'm curious how you go about that kind of process of creating, you know, one of your Fabio chests or whatever the product is.
Oh, no, that's correct. Fabio's chest. On sale 2 weeks.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Plug it.
RonsBikes.com, everyone. Yes, go now. The products that I don't like stepping on people's feet. You know, it's a small industry, but I've always thought that I'm talking about the bicycle industry, outdoor industry, maybe a broader term. But you know, I have always felt that it's an industry that needs to be reformed in some certain way. You know, there's stuff out there, so much great stuff out there, but there could always be better stuff, you know, so, or an idea that hasn't been thought out thoroughly. And when you're riding the bike, you know, 10, 12 hours a day sometimes, you're looking at whatever you're using in a different way. I always look at the, you know, the pedaling motion, the wheels turning as a deep form of meditation for me, so it's my thinking time. And if you run out of other more pressing issues to think about, all you have to think about is your gear and how you can make it better. So I do a lot of that while I'm riding the bike. And if I see something, if I can think of something that I want and it doesn't exist, I make it. Yeah. It's been a business model. It's worked well enough so far.
Right. And you've worked, it seems, to make your life, to live a life that doesn't have any other pressing issues that you have to think about, so you that you can just focus on those pedal strokes and on creating these new bags. I mean, how have you kind of pared down your life to just what you need and just the simple things over the years?
I've had a pretty, you know, I there wasn't any crash course that I had in this. It's been a way that I've lived all along. So it's never been an adjustment for me. The way that, I said I graduated high school 20 years ago, this actually yesterday.
Oh, wow.
But ever since I graduated high school, I've never been in one place for longer than 6 months. So you can only take so many things with you, especially when your only mode of transportation is a bike. So I never accumulated anything other than a lot of bicycle parts. Those are all jammed under my parents' basement still. And I keep a storage unit in Tucson. Bunch of other stuff in there, all bikes. But yeah, bikes and cameras are really the only things that I've ever held on to. So it does make for 20 years now, I've been almost consistently on the move. So it's just never, I suppose, if I were to stop and start accumulating things, then that would be the big adjustment for me.
Was there a point that you would say, like in high school or in those early years, when you like concretely decided to live in that way of an on the move, simple lifestyle, or was it just a kind of after high school that was just the natural progression of how you saw your life would lead?
With that all being said, I did have this. I feel maybe it's hopefully a little bit less pervasive in your generation, but in my generation, you know, it was very typical. You're expected to graduate high school and go to college and pick out your major, and that's what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You get out, get that job, and get your house, and you know how it goes.
Right.
Wife and kids, and you're dead. And, I'm sure there's something in between, but yeah.
Just a little.
But yeah, you know, I was very much, very much abided by that, by the ideals of the American dream, because that was presented as the only option when I was growing up pre-internet. Sorry, I'm riding up, going up a hill.
Oh, no problem, dude.
It took a while for me to break from that paradigm in my head. I was always, I think, heading a different way just by accident. I've had a lot of support always from my parents. I've had a lot of great friends. I've always been very blessed in that way that I've had people back up my decisions and never question. Like, I've never had parents that were like, well, you better get a job, or you're loafing it. When I was your age, I had a 401k and was already withdrawing. So my father was an entrepreneur. My mom is just a wonderful person, like the best, so supportive. So really, whatever I was choosing was okay by them. So I never had that looming over my head, and so I was really able to kind of go about my life organically in that way, and just find my own way. And I went to college, I got a degree and everything, and afterwards I don't envy anybody in that position just post-college, like looking for what the hell you're supposed to be doing. It's the worst. Like the worst part. I get so much better, trust me. It gets so much better. You'll get through it. It fucking sucks, though. Oh, my God. And, and that's where a lot of people, linger for, sometimes 10 years, Sometimes, I guess, after saying you will get out of it, I guess, suppose some people don't. The prospect of getting, one of these normal jobs and being so far removed from your end product, I'm saying if you're, shit, what are you, like a typical, like, coder or office manager or I don't know, something, but, you're going to work every day, but what are you working for, right? What's the end product? Do you even know what it is? Does the corporation that you work for, do they give a shit about you? And the answer is usually no.
Right.
And so it's why am I working towards that? Why am I going to devote my life to just something completely meaningless? And how vapid is that? Holy shit, right?
So,
you know, it's just realizing that, I think, and having the support of my family behind me, I was able to kind of, and with, you know, the hours on the bicycle saddle, you know, these alternative ideas come to you, and you just kind of figure out how to improve your life, and you find out what's important. You have the time, you have to take the time and not accidentally become a father or mother or whatever, you know, and, you know, don't make the mistakes, plan your life, and, take the time to just evaluate what's going to work and, like, what's going to work best for you. You know, we have nothing but time right now, honestly. You're not missing out on anything. Just take the time and figure out what you want to do and find out what your aptitude is and dedicate your life to it. That's what I ended up doing.
With all the time you spent on the bike and this Ronnie philosophy that you've been building, do you journal or anything like that? Do you write this down? Do you record it in any way, or do you share it out in any way? I'm just curious.
I have heard I used to journal when I was in high school, but no, I don't. I get hand cramps now. You know, you only write every once in a while. You get hand cramps.
Right.
No, I don't. I sometimes I'll jot down, like in the notes on my phone or something, just like a quick idea. I honestly really should do that more. So you do. There's a lot of different thoughts that come to you when you have time to let them come to you.
Right.
I suppose maybe I'd think of maybe my brain has I'm trusting my brain has a natural filter in it. Maybe if I have a good idea, I just remember it.
Yeah, it'll stick around if it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, as somebody who's 20 years old, your advice or your observations on aptitude and sticking to it speaks definitely to what I've been thinking about and musing on in my running and my writing over my time in college, you know, here. And I think it's like you were saying, it's some people never get out of that trying to figure out what they want to do in life, right? And at least in my experience, you know, some people never started, you know, they just kind of did like what you were saying, what was expected, and they never even took the time to look at a little deeper of what actually matters to them.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. There really is nothing wrong with that if you're happy, you know.
Right.
But there are some people that's going to work.
Right.
Work great.
Right.
That's awesome. Like, in many ways, you know, frantic or whatever, in your moments of madness, you wish, you know, that you had that solace, that you could be like, just work a 9-to-5, punch a time card, go home and eat up your dinner and watch TV and go to bed, you'd be happy, you know, but I have a hard time believing that. So I don't remember where I was going with that, sorry.
No problem.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's it. Yeah. It works for some people.
Right.
But, you know, it doesn't work for everyone, and I know there are a lot of unhappy people out there. How old are you? Are you 19 or 20?
20, yeah, 20.
20. You know, if anyone listening is, you know, in your age bracket is, the best thing to do is just not believe the hype. Like, don't think that you have to run right into a career. Like, you have time, figure it out, and find out what you're good at, and just focus on it. And you'll never have to, like, it's so cheesy to say, find what you love, and you'll never have to work a day in your life, but it's true. Like, you can do it.
Yeah, and, you know, in terms of like the love for it, you know, you mentioned a little earlier about your love, your passion for the bicycle, and it was your first love. And you mentioned in one of, I think it was a specialized video that they did of you. And it just struck me as another poignant observation on, well, that you've made, I guess, is that you said that the bike is maybe the only invention that we've made as humans that can actually advance us and not, you know, advance us and then push us back again. And I'm curious if you, do you still, you know, think that? I mean, what are your kind of your observations on the bike as a tool for bettering our society?
Yeah, you know, as some people, most people know, I suppose, the bicycle predated the car. It was our first, you know, after the, over 100 years ago, in the late 1800s, we came up with this contraption that that freed people who didn't have horses and didn't have other ways to get around. This is before public transportation, before, you know, any motorized transportation. The bicycle outnumbered the car well into the 1910s by, you know, by 10 to 1. So it's it was the most popular sport in the country at the turn of the century. There's no doubt in my mind why. It's, can you imagine if you had never, like, people can't even, don't even know how, to this day, they don't know how the bicycle works. Science doesn't know how the bicycle stands up while it's moving. They thought it was centrifugal force of the caster effect, but those have both been debunked. The bicycle still stays up without those two. And so imagine if you had never seen a bicycle before, and all of a sudden this some person rolled by you on a wheel, you know, no more than 2 inches thick, just going down the road. Like, that must have just tripped you the fuck out, right? Imagine that. You're just, like, on a horse or like playing stickball. Whatever they did back then. Picking your nose, and someone goes by you on this, like, magical new invention. I mean, it was a sensation. It's essentially a human upgrade. It turned us instantly into cyborgs. Think about what you can do while you're... Think about the distance you can cover running or walking. And then think about the distance you can cover on a bicycle. You're going from, say, like 4 to 5 miles an hour. All of a sudden, you're able to maintain an average speed of 20 miles an hour, all under your own power. Right. The bicycle gear and the wheel and everything just increases your own power and makes you a superhero and sucking bad ass. The best invention ever. And but at the same time, it's also, this is the interesting thing. It spawned the Industrial Revolution, because the bicycle couldn't just be made by, like, your town blacksmith. It had to it had precision parts that had to be manufactured. This was one of the inventions that, you know, forced us into factories, spawned the industrialization of the world.
Right.
After that comes the steam engine, the automobile. Everyone gives up on the bicycle once the automobile comes around. And, you know, really not until the 70s did adults start riding bicycles again, in this country at least, with the fuel shortages. I just think it's, you get somebody on a bike and they become a better person immediately, not only physically but mentally. You're, like we were saying before, it's just such a beautiful way to meditate, because you're still traveling at a human pace, so you're able to take in all the senses that you're able to experience while running or walking. That's still happening, like, in real time all around you, but you're just gliding by, you know, just beautifully at this perfect speed, no sound. And it's just a beautiful place to be. And you think of where we are now and where we were when we invented the bicycle and what it brought us. It's such a huge leap in the wrong direction. We just should have stopped with the bicycle.
And it's so, because it's human powered. I mean, it's so visceral. It's so, you're so, like, in tune with what you're doing there. It's kind of hard to not be present in many ways. Yeah. Because you're right there pushing those pedals and being on that dirt or on that asphalt, moving yourself forward. I mean, that's
absolutely,
yeah, it's completely what, yeah, I, yeah, see too when I'm on the bike.
And, yeah, and when you can use it as for utilitarian purposes too, where you realize, oh, I don't even need a car. Like, I could do everything on this, and I know how to fix everything when you keep a bike simple the way it should be. It's a pretty empowering tool.
Right. And it also seems like the simplicity of it, the love that people have for it draws people together. And we see that in the communities that are built around riding bikes. I'm sure you see the same, obviously, in the bikepacking community and whatever community you would most identify with. But, you know, kind of coming together around bikes.
Yeah. It's been really cool. There's certainly been a resurgence with our current environmental movements and cutting out fossil fuels altogether and things like, you know, sure, you could buy a Tesla, but let me tell you, a bicycle is a lot cheaper.
Right.
So it's, I think we're at a perfect storm for bicycles within the next 10 years here. Gravel racing, gravel, like off-road, GPS adventure type stuff, it's been a real boom in the bicycle industry, and it's getting a lot of people, a lot of ex-roadies, or roadies in general, off the road, away from cars, away from distracted drivers, and bringing you out to beautiful places that you otherwise would never access, or other ways you could access it. It's maybe, I'm sure you've been running on, where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles, but I go to college in San Luis Obispo.
Oh, beautiful. The places that you go and run and you're like followed by like Jeeps and stuff and in the backcountry and things like that. Can you imagine, that's your tool to get out? That's the primary tool for Americans to get out and experience nature. It's actually on one of those side-by-sides. I don't really know what you're gathering, what you're getting out of that, but, you know, when you could head out there on a bicycle, just have no sound, it's a beautiful way to experience the outdoors. So that's my agenda, just pushing people to get out there and just feel the rhythms of the world.
How would you say that someone would go about getting into bikepacking and using their bike to go out into the nature that surrounds them and see it for themselves?
The easiest thing to do is just, if you've never done it before and all you have is a bicycle, say you're just in college and you've got a free weekend, tell one of your friends you want to go camping and just grab a backpack and put it on, stuff your sleeping bag in or something, a few snacks, and pick a place on a map and ride to it, camp for the night, ride back, and that's the best way to start. You don't need anything. Like, people think you need a lot of fancy gear. You do if you want to do some longer trips, but not to start. And I always tell people to start with an overnight. Overnights are, like, you can do an overnight trip in less than 24 hours and get out pretty far, like way further than you could if you just put a backpack on and walked there. You could ride 5 miles into a local trail network and pitch your tent, light a fire, not in California, of course, but and cook a dinner over the fire. Oh man, it's so cool. It's the best.
Yeah.
And once you're ready for more, it'll happen. You'll just kind of start accumulating more and more gear, like you do with every bicycle. Touring is a pretty gear-centric sport. Even being a minimalist in the rest of my life, I really do nerd out on the tech part of gear and getting your kit as lightweight as possible. There are a few parallels with, I suppose, the way you want to, what you learn while you're touring, you learn what you truly need. That's something that I want to point out. And so you do it. I know, kind of diverting from the question a little bit, but yeah, when you're touring, you figure out what you need and what you don't need. And when you always come out of the tour, whether it's even an overnight or a 2 week trip, with just a greater perspective on life. Like, oh shit, I was just out there for 2 weeks with nothing but what's on my bike. Shit, what do I need this house for? And with that, I've got a ride leaving in about 10 minutes here.
No worries, man.
I've got to go to the bathroom pretty bad.
No worries.
But I hope that was enough for a podcast.
It definitely was. And honestly, I could talk to you about many more things. Yeah. So I would love to have you on another time and chat some more if you'd be willing.
Yeah.
But
I would be willing. Those are great questions.
You awesome.
A good start.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Let's keep in touch.
And you're extremely enlightened for a 20-year-old. I applaud you.
Thank you. It means a lot. Thank you. Gracias. All right. Well, you catch your ride and you go to the bathroom. Take care. And let's definitely keep in touch. And we'll chat again soon, I'm sure.
Very good, Jared.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on the show. And that was that. Episode 181 of the Touching the Trail podcast with this week's guest, Ultra Bromance. Now, if you want to find out more about what he is up to, what Ronnie's up to, if you want to buy some of his bikepacking gear and other bike-related gear that he sells, granted the bikepacking gear, the bags are sold out currently, but they're going to go back on sale in about 11 days on a restock. Nevertheless, check all of that out on ronsbikes.com. That's where you can find him. And then, of course, if you want to follow all the craziness of his whole character, his life, his lifestyle, his persona, the mythos of Ultra Romance, head on over to Instagram and follow him at Ultra Romance, and then his other Instagram account at UltraRomance_Mach2. And all those links are in the show notes. If you want to find out more about what Touching the Trail is up to, you can go to touchingthetrail.com, where you can read the writings, you can read the resources on meditation, on food, on recommended readings, you can sign up for the newsletter, and if you ever have any questions or comments, you can just reach out to me via the contact page on the website. You can also follow us on social media, at Touching the Trail on Instagram, at Touch the Trail on Twitter, and the Touching the Trail page on Facebook. If you haven't done so already, make sure to subscribe to the show and share it out with your friends and your family and your coworkers and everyone else. If you're loving the show every week, please leave a review. It lets me know that you're out there and that you're listening and that you're enjoying what I do. If you want to help support Touching the Trail, you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And so that I can improve and continue to do what I do here as a college student, I just hope that you consider donating, and I ask that you consider donating to help me grow and improve what I do here. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Now, these are functional, affordable, unique, and handmade handheld deep tissue massage tools. And all of those links are in the show notes, as always. And going forward this week, I just hope that you guys can find, either refine or develop a passion for bikes. And I know that's not something that's going to happen in a week, probably, but just get out there on a bike, as Ronnie said, and see what you can do. Maybe if you were compelled from his musings on what a bike can do for a person, maybe pick a campsite somewhere near you, pick a destination, ride to it, bring some food, bring a sleeping bag, and camp and ride back. Who knows? Maybe you'll fall in love. And as always, remember to go far, go further, and fall in love with bikes. We'll see what happens. I'll see you all next week on the Touching the Trail podcast. Thanks for listening. The Touching the Trail podcast.